Hey y'all, welcome to Chef Journeys. I just found out we hit 300 downloads. I can't thank you guys enough. On this episode, we're going to talk to a guy named Charlie Negrete. Now, Charlie and I worked together back in the dawn of the century, somewhere around 2006, 2007. And I was the chef de cuisine and he was a cook. And I'm proud to say that this guy has taken a vocation, a career, and really found his calling with cooking and being a chef. And we're going to get to have him tell you the story. But I'm just so excited that you're here with us today. And I can't wait to get into it. So we're going to do it. Here we go. All right. Welcome to Chef Journeys. With me today is a good buddy of mine, Charlie Negrete. So, Charlie, welcome. Thank you for coming to play with us.
Thank you, Chef Simon.
All right, man. I think it's important that everybody understands that you and I worked together, what is pushing on 20 years ago. Wow. I was the chef de cuisine and you were a cook. And I think that you have really come up and done some great things. So it is Chef Journeys, and I do want to just kind of put the foot on the gas and get moving. So I'm going to ask you, how'd you get into this whole thing that we call the industry?
I love that question. And it is definitely pretty raw, but it started off not, it didn't have to be that way. But the opportunity that arose was an uncle was working at a restaurant in the city of Lomita. And he said, you know, I needed a job and I wanted to buy tapes and shoes and clothes of my own at 15. And so he said, hey, man, you could earn a paycheck washing dishes at my restaurant. And 15-year-old walks in, meets the chef owner, and he just sees a young buck, man. And so then he offers me the job, and I just start there washing dishes.
Nice. Yep. Nice. All right. So now you're in it, and you're moving along. I mean, how does it go from there? Like, what gets you, what keeps you moving in it?
Well, I saw the family that was there in this, now, you know, after Anthony Bourdain's books and all of the things that we, you know, after 20 years in the industry, I realized he said, the kitchen is like a bunch of pirates on a ship. And my family was a bunch of pirates in gangs and in, you know, addicted and in jail. So I saw the two and I felt comfortable in that chaotic environment because my family mirrored it. But what kept me in it was exactly that, the chef and owner was, you know, he was the guy that was walking around, you know, during, breaking down lunch, going into dinner service. And he had a nice glass of wine. He was smoking a joint, walking through the kitchen and passing it to his, sous chef. And then they're there and I'm a dishwasher looking at this. And I'm like, man, I just see my dad and my uncles, you know, as I look at these two guys doing the same thing, like I'm at home. And my first paycheck was the chef offering me, instead of money, he said, I know you smoke weed because you smoke with me. And I would like to offer you, instead of a paycheck, I would like to pay you in Thai sticks, which at that time was, you know, big, long buds, you know, they're pretty thick and fat and sticky. And he was paying me in Thai sticks every 2 weeks. And so that for me was the beginning of knowing that this is co-signing on my lifestyle, my family's lifestyle. And this is an industry where I'm getting paid. And I think I could do this forever. At 15, I thought that because of that wild intro to culinary world, you know, back of the house.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I've been paid in a few things, never Thai sticks myself.
Yeah.
you know, I think that, you know, for me, I was right about that same age and I looked around and it was a little less homey for me, but it was a little more like, huh, all right. But everybody treated me like I was just another person. And it was the band of pirates for sure. So I definitely feel
that's
that.
Right. That's know? Right.
I don't know. Tell me more, man. Tell me about like how, I mean, you've been doing it for 23, 25 years. So,
yeah,
How does that sort of evolve? How does that move down the road? Like, you get out of that restaurant and you go to somewhere else, and somewhere down the line you meet Chef Simon, but I think there's something in between there.
Yeah, there's a lot in between there. That the year I met Chef Simon was like maybe mid 2000s, and then but before that I was still, you know, getting my chops in. I think I did close to a year of a dishwashing station. And then each time, you know, the chef would pay me in these Thai sticks, I'd take them home and I'd, you know, chop them up and I'd put them into nickel bags and, you know, dime bags, and I'd sell them at school. And now I'm, you know, getting like a very high paying dishwasher job at age 15, 16. Uh-huh. And, I did move up the ranks there, and he allowed me to learn how to make cheesecakes and then making salads. But I made the Garmanger station. It was a small restaurant, was the walk-in. So I'm making salads in the walk-in, freezing with jackets on. It was pretty crazy. But I used all that money to support a meth habit that I developed at like age 12, 11. And so then all the money that I was making on selling the weed from the dishwasher job supported my meth habit. And then after that, it was like every job that I would take, you know, it was, you know, essentially the same thing. And living at home, it was really just living to support a habit. But, you know, along with that pirate band of the kitchen industry and the family, like I mentioned earlier, it was the circle I surrounded myself with. And I was a group of friends kind of running the streets in the city of Carson here. And it was sad, because by the time I hit 18, two of them died and the other two ended up going to jail for 4 years. Oh, man. And after that, I was like, all right, either I go back into the restaurants or try to make something of myself or not. And, you know, I graduated high school by the skin of my teeth. And so somebody spoke into my life at around that time, where I found out my friends were going to do 4 year bids for, you know, breaking and entering into a house to steal things to buy more meth. And usually we go together and do that. But this time, you know, if you go with less people, that means more for you and more drugs for you at the end. And so they went without me, and blessing in disguise, because they got popped that night. And then the moment I heard their 4 year sentence, I realized I needed to change my route in life. And my uncle spoke into my life and said, look, why don't you go to the military? I knew nothing about it really, but I went into the recruiter station, and hook, line, and sinker, I signed up, man. And I just said, I need to escape. And so that was my escape. So I went to the military at age around 18, and went around the world twice, Korea, Singapore, Japan, Malaysia, the Middle East, Hawaii, went around the world twice. And I went from becoming a real bad meth addict to a real good alcoholic, a professional even. I knew how to drink, and I knew how many hours I needed until I could show up for the next day's work in the military in order to not get kicked out. I went to a captain's mass twice, which is the military's version of the court system. And that's a whole hour episode, but I'll forward it into, I got out 4 years with the honorable discharge, thank God, because I definitely should have been caught for the things I was doing in the military. And I didn't quite, you know, I got in trouble, but I never got kicked out. So that means I completed my 4 year Navy term on an aircraft carrier with the honorable discharge. And now out of the military, it was like, either I go back to culinary school or I continue the career that I did in the military, which was avionics technician on helicopters. And so I tried that for a little bit out in Torrance, working at Robinson's Helicopters. And I did that for close to a year, but I was like just a caged lion trying to break out of this union older. It was an older male run workforce, and, you know, everybody just waiting to clock out for lunch and then clock back in, and schematics and blueprints. And I was going crazy, and I had an addiction, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'm a meth addict. And didn't last long until I realized I'm going to go to culinary school, and I'm going to go back into that pirate co-signing environment that I know would accept me for my alcoholic addict self. And I'm going to travel the world. And then I went through culinary school, and it was the 2 year period at Le Cordon Bleu in Pasadena was kind of like a Dazed and Confused movie, and Up in Smoke, Cheech and Chong type movie for me. Cause again, just barely getting by, a fully functioning alcoholic addict. And it was all a blur for me. And then while I was about to graduate, I got a job at a place called Enoteca Drago, which is in Beverly Hills. And they were just opening up, and it was going to be like my first official line cook position. And because I had so much experience of going around the world twice, had culinary school, I've worked some jobs, washed some dishes, I lied on my resume and said that I had experience as a line cook, but I was still in culinary school, just got out of the military, really no line experience. And they hired me, you know, they hired me, they knew I was going to work hard, which I did. And in 6 months, I made it to lead line cook on that line as the pasta guy in a Chef Celestino Enoteca Drago restaurant. And he trained me how to make risottos and pastas from scratch. And he's a legend. He has a big legacy that he has all around the world, I think, but for sure here in LA and Beverly Hills. And I'll never forget the first night of service. We're going to open up, and then the sous chef, I forget his name, but he was a short, stocky redhead, really great guy. But before service, he says, "Okay, Charlie, go down the street to the alley to the, I think it was the Ralph's, and then buy for all the line cooks 5 Gatorades and a big handle, a big bottle of vodka, and then come back." And then it was a ritual now. He was creating a ritual. This is the first time we did it at this restaurant, which is normal in most restaurants. Everybody drink half your Gatorade bottle, fill the other half with vodka. Okay, let's go. Okay, we're about to open up in an hour, half hour. Everybody's station is set, cool, okay. And then he pulls out a little white baggie and he dangles it in front of everybody. And he's like, "All right, who wants to hit this?" Little did he know, he was speaking right into my spirit and soul, because I was an addict since age 12.
Obviously, there was some ups and downs to the whole thing. And I think that it can easily be said that there's always something that changes, that precipitates change, is a catalyst, whatever you want to say. What would you say was something that like changed you and kind of pushed you in the direction? Because I know part of the story already, and I know that you have come to a pretty good place. So why don't you tell us how kind of what that corner was that you turned, and then you're now at Bracken's Kitchen. So how do we get from turning the corner and all the way into Bracken's Kitchen, and then
oh yeah,
tell us what's going on. Tell us what that looks and feels like.
The parts, but the overall tone is very similar to that situation that I painted for you. Is like service is opening. Okay, let's hit the whatever it may be. In my case, it was like bag of speed, and let's drink the whole way through, and then let's close the bars down. And it was just cycle repeat every service, you know. But then there came a point where I just needed to move up in my career, and you can't really move up in your career if you're not focused on the progression, you know. You're not focused on your resume, you're not focused on your networking, and I never really focused on that. And so as I saw people around me moving up, that was my cue to like, I need to move up too.
Okay, so the thing that kept me in the industry and the thing that turned for the better in my life had to be knowing that I had to leave the industry. For me at that point, because I made it to a point where I'm in Redondo Beach and a lady hires me. She poached me from the Peninsula Hotel and says, "Hey, I see your resume. I see you're lightly seeking out, you know, a change. And I want to eventually pass this restaurant on to my executive chef, and I want to hire you and have talks and let's see what happens." So I did that for a year. But that year it was even more work than before. It was the 16 hours for 7 days instead of just 6 days now, because now you got to wake up and go buy produce, and you got to close the night because the cooks left. It was a small restaurant, 60 seats. And I, you know, went through escrow, failed, and I was trying to push a square peg in a round hole, and nothing was working. And at that time, I had discovered sobriety. And sobriety for me equals a 20-year addiction broken. And so that, in a nutshell, is you could call it a 3-step program or a 1-step program. But essentially, if it's a three-way program, it's going to be Jesus, Bible, and Church. Got me real good in December of 2012, and it liberated me from a 20-year addiction. And so in one day, and so since that day, for the past 12 years, I've been completely clean and sober off all drugs and alcohol and cigarettes. Nice. And just a life of sanity now that I have. And but what helped me, you know, turn that corner was, you know, without talking about the bottoms, just in general, like that is the thing that got me to a point of now I have everything that I thought I ever wanted, which is a restaurant on the beach, and I'm in escrow. And again, square peg going through a round hole. It just didn't fit. It didn't work. So I left that idea, and I ended up leaving the industry as a whole. And I really contemplated my life and what skills do I have, military, production, organization, knowing how to produce things in a fast-paced environment. And I really tried to find a job that suited that and a high-paying job with normal human hours. And I sought everything for a good 3-4 months, almost half a year. And during this half a year, I'm just doing staffing jobs, paying bills, you know, catering, Wolfgang right. Puck, and just random jobs. You know, I saw some cool things along the way, but now I'm clean and sober, and I'm looking for a job to not co-sign on my lifestyle, but support my lifestyle with family and balance, a work-life balance. And it ended up, a door opened, and without going too far into that story, the door opened, and it was the door of Drug and Alcohol Rehabilitation Center, an intensive outpatient program. I had, at that point, going on 2 years of clean time. The lady heard my story, like, wait, you were addicted for 20 years, and then in one day, and then you're saying it was Jesus? Like, what's that about? And so as I unpacked it, just being real with her on how it all happened, and I'm like, yeah, now I'm about to hit 2 years. And she's like, you know what, I like your story, I like your attitude, I would like to offer you a job with normal, in my mind, when you hear like 8 to 4, I hear normal human hours. And so then and Monday through Friday too. And then she asked me, how much do you need to live? And I gave her a number. And then there you go, man. I was, she trained me to be a case manager at a drug and alcohol rehab program in Huntington Beach on Beach Boulevard. And I did that for an entire year. House manager, case manager, running groups, you know, testing people for drugs now. And I remember I took my first breathalyzer, and because I've been drinking since I was 9-10 years old, and I stopped at age 32, I have 3 DUIs, I've crashed 3 cars, I woke up in jail not knowing why I'm there. But I remember this one moment at this rehab center where I was able to take a breathalyzer that wasn't forced by a police officer. And I'll never forget blowing into that cap and that breathalyzer, knowing that I wasn't drunk. Just that confidence of knowing that I wasn't drunk or have alcohol in my breath. To me, after I exhaled that big breath and saw like the clean reading, no lie, I just started tearing it up. Like, I can't believe I was able to do this like this, you know? And so that whole run lasted a year working there. And it ended up closing down. The lady that owned the place, in hindsight, I heard she relapsed on pills. And so the business went down real fast, down tubes. And what it looks like for us was she called us all into a meeting and she said, hey, these are your last checks. I am so sorry. We will not be open tomorrow. And I remember laughing like, this is too crazy. Like, this ain't, I'm laughing. And then the lady's like, well, why are you laughing, Charlie? I'm like, well, me and my wife just signed the paperwork and we're in escrow on a home right now. And so I walk out of the office and I'm on a second story balcony. And I'll never forget this moment where I knew that escrow was going to fold. Me and the wife are trying to get a house. I have all this clean time and I know God did it. And I remember I was on the second story and I was looking up at the sky and I'm like, God, I know you saved me. I know, like, I got this new job now, and you know what I'm going through. Why would you let this happen to me? Like, why? Like, I was really upset at God. And then I remember, and the way I like to describe it is like a metal bat hit my spirit and soul with a ringing question that I couldn't get out of the echoes of my ears. And it was, are you going to trust me or are you going to trust your current situation? And that right there, my friend, caused me to say, okay, you're right. If you can save me from a 20-year addiction, I'm going to trust you. Because you've been saving me. And then just waking up even today, I look in the mirror, I'm like, dang, like, you're not hungover. You're not coming down. You're not waking up in jail. Like, it's a miracle. And so I said, okay, now what? So I called my friends, all of my chef friends. And I said, look, I need a job yesterday. I need to prove income for this escrow that I'm going to probably fail, but I'm going to give it my damnest best try that I can. And so a friend calls me and he says, yo, I'm an executive sous at Bottega Louie. We could, you know, you could come over here, you could get a sous chef spot, help me run the expo line, train the stations, help my guys. And I had a tasting, passed the tasting. They liked it, got hired. And then I was at Bottega Louie's for, I think, around 4 to 6 months. And within those 4 to 6 months, the same scenario repeated itself where the host is buying weed from the dishwasher, the waiter selling shrooms to the line cook. There's somebody shooting up in the alley. And it is what it is. And I remember I went to the general manager and I'm like, hey, the host is buying weed from the dishwasher. I'm like, just diming everybody out now, because at this point I'm like, man, I understand what morals and ethics and good and wrong. Like, I understand these things now. They're real. My conscience is heavy. I never used to have one. Now it's heavy. It's on me. It's weighing. I'm like, I got to say something. And he laughs at me and he says, bro, do you know what industry you're in right now? Do you know where you're at? Like, this is what we do. And I'm like, you're right. You're so right. What in the world am I thinking trying to drop dime on everybody, because this is what happens. And so then now I'm like, all right, I just need to do something different. I don't know what I need to do. I'm lost. And I'm just like lost in life. And here's the corner. A friend calls me up. He says, hey, are you still looking for that job where, you know, let me know a while ago? And I'm like, yes. And he's like, okay, I got a job for you. And what he describes to me is the answer for my then. And then now, 10 years later, my now, it's still the answer. He says, here's what we do. And then he described the three things that he offered me the job for. And he said, we're going to save food from being wasted, which as chefs, that's all we do at the end of a service. We have to throw it away because we don't want to get sued and make somebody sick, which is a lie, by the way. It's nowadays, you could use that food, and they're pushing people to use the food. So we save food from being wasted. We feed people who are hungry, specifically homeless people or the people who are down and out on their times. So we're saving food, we're feeding hungry people that are in need, and we're training people with a free education to essentially a culinary school that is going to get them a job in the career industry. Those are the three things that we're doing. And at that time, they had a contract with LAX where they're doing grab-and-goes, think about 4,000 units a night. And so it's a business. And that right there was the way that it all made sense to where, yeah, I could do good. I could still be in food, and I could go help and be a part of the change. And one person can make a difference. Somebody told me yesterday morning, one person can make a difference, but if thousands, you know, catch suit and catch on, then the revolution for change begins. And so I've been an advocate for that for the past 10 years of minimizing food waste. Last year, we recovered 500 tons of food. Not all has been like produce. It's like dry boxes and tomato cans as well. And we fed 2 million people, and we're training people every day on how to get a job. So
wait. Say that again, because that part's amazing to me. Say that part again. How many people?
Last 2 million people.
That is amazing.
People. 2 million people, and we're on track to increase it this year. Technically, it's 1.923 something or other, but I rounded to 2 million.
2 million's a good number, brother.
Yeah.
Two million's good.
And so, awesome. It's every day. It's 8,000 meals a day. It's a massive 10,000 square foot kitchen called Bracken's Kitchen where we're at. And I am the leader of the program that is the culinary school piece of what we do. So so that's what we do there. And so for the past 10 years, I've been doing that same thing. The funny thing is when they, I 10 years ago when I first started this, the entry that my friend said is, you still got to do a tasting. And I said, a tasting for a place that recovers food, feeds homeless people? Wait, how does that look like? And he says, yeah, you need to give me an entree, a drink, a dessert, and I think an appetizer. All food costed under like $4.50. And I went from tastings where you just email the list of all the ingredients you want. Maybe you go a day ahead and prep for a few hours, and you go on the next day and you do your final, your best three or four dishes you got. But this one was, no, you come in, food costs under $4.50, an entree, a drink, a dessert, and an appetizer. And I was like, oh man, this is different. And that's all I've been doing so far, man, is that same lane, you know, saving food, feeding hungry people, and creating job opportunities. And so that's what I'm about for the most part right now, man.
That's amazing, Charlie. I'm so proud of you, man. Like, I just on a very, very basic human level, I'm proud of you for figuring out what needed to be, right? But also, like, for finding something that, you know, really like digs down deep into your soul and allows you to like do the thing with passion and pride every day. Cause I think everybody's got that. Everybody, you know, for a lot of us in the restaurant industry, like, it's exciting to do what we're doing. You know, there's a million ways to say it, right? Like, passion, it drives us and it just keeps us charging forward. But I think when you can find the thing that just makes you excited to get out of bed and go do the thing, it's still hard working, right? Like, there's no doubt that, like, there's challenges and there's hard parts to it. But I genuinely commend you for, like, being able to find that thing.
You know, and it actually found me, because as I said, now, like, I've been, you know, leading that culinary training program there, but it all started 10 years ago at LA Kitchen. The guy who called me up to offer me the job, presented me the tasting opportunity and everything, I was working with him. I was his right hand man, Chef Renato. And he said, you know, the chef instructor's leaving. He's going for a trip to Australia. He'll be back. And we need you to fill in for the culinary training, you know, as a chef instructor. And I'm like, bro, I'm not a teacher. I can't teach. Like, what? And he's like, well, just give it a shot. And so I went into this classroom, and it was between 15 to 20 people who were a mirror reflection of myself. Addicts or former addicts or coming clean off of drugs and alcohol, sober living homes. People coming out of homelessness, recently housed, trying to get a leg up in life using food. People who are coming out of prison system. My father, my uncles, I just saw them. I've woken up in jail, but never did a long bid in prison. You know, I always, you know, skin of my teeth, stayed out of any long bid. I've been on a murder trial before, tried to pin something on me. That never happened. And that actually connects back to my first chef, who's doing life in prison. So now I have this room of these people who are essentially me, but in another body and another spirit and just a whole other person. But I saw myself in all of them, because if they weren't relating to me exactly, well, they're just coming out of where my father came out of homelessness, right? He actually died on the street. So that makes it more powerful, because he died homeless in an alley in Corona. So now, as I say, 2 million people we feed every year, it's like every single meal is like an honor to my father now. And so it gets deep. And that just goes into, you said earlier, is like everybody has their thing where they find their corner. And I just challenge everybody, is like, if you have air in your lungs, you have a purpose and a mission for your life, and it's all different, and you have your own category to get into. And it all boils down to, what gifts were you given? And then once you discover your gift, then you realize, whoa, I have my gift. I discovered my gift. And then hopefully you could, you know, make it look like action. With mine is action now. I'm saving food from being wasted, or feeding people that are homeless. So it makes sense for me to do that in my shoes. And we're creating job opportunities. I'm able to paint a positive light in what I came up as a dark industry filled with addiction and drugs and drinking. And the thing is, you discover your gift. That's mine. Yours is going to be different. Everybody else is going to be different. But the gift isn't meant for you to go get that white picket fence over the rainbow and be in la la land. and enjoy life. No, your gift is meant to come back and find the way to give it away, because it was never meant for you. It was meant for other people, right? And so that's the key, you know, is finding your gift, finding how to put it into action, but then finding that action. How do you give it away to other people? Whether it's mentoring, training, coaching, being somebody in somebody else's life that you never had or you needed. And it gets real deep, and there's many layers to it all. And this, even this line of speaking right now, the thought process that I have, it blows my mind, because I'm an alcoholic addict, cook, sailor guy, right? All this that I have, it's like, I feel like it's a Wi-Fi USB of God's spirit connecting to my spirit, empowering me to really help somebody out, you know, and that's my way of giving it away. And I mean, God's spirit, I mean, that's the truth right there. You know, that's Jesus.
Yep. Absolutely. Well, awesome. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you just sharing your story and your chef's journey with us. And so you're at Bracken's Kitchen.
Yes, Bill Bracken.
Right on.
And he should be on your show, by the way.
That is good. Not out of the realm of possibility. I would love the opportunity to talk to anybody who's doing that kind of work. For me, Chef Journeys is about just hearing other people's stories about how they relate to the food, how they relate to the people, how we do this thing, right? Like, whether you're feeding one person or 2 million a year or whatever that may be, the relation to the food and the people and the industry takes so many shapes. And I think that my biggest thing is to try and bring all of those things to light, so that we don't get caught just stuck in the mainstream media watching Bobby Flay, Gordon Ramsay, and whatever.
Yeah. Right?
Don't get me wrong. I watch those things. I like those things, but there's more to it. So,
for sure.
Well, thanks again for coming and playing with us. I truly appreciate it. I look forward to doing something down the road where we could potentially talk about whatever next leg is there on the journey. So,
for sure.
Thank you to you all for watching and listening and checking out the journey. So thanks again, Charlie.
I love you, man. Thank you.
Yep.